That's why basketball, in my opinion, is the best sport there is, because you really don't have control.
Welcome to Hoop Nerds with Billy Kegler, presented by the Wisconsin Basketball Coaches Association. We talk to coaches, athletes, and more to learn from their stories and apply learning lessons to improve each individual and stimulate growth for your program, team, staff, and self. Follow along as we explore success and failure en route to improving the game of basketball.
Before we jump in today, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. I've been associated with their products for a few years now, and I'm really impressed by their innovative and user-friendly shooting machines. They also are great people with tremendous customer service. It's no wonder why they have become the preferred choice among top programs around the country and world. I am very grateful for their support of the show. Make sure to check them out at drdishbasketball.com and at Dr. Dish B-Ball on social media. Be sure to mention WBCA when ordering your next Dr. Dish to save an extra $300 off any commercial purchase. Coach Dernbach, welcome to the Hoop Nerds.
That's great to be here.
All right, let's go back in time. Tell me about the first time you coached something, anything, and a story that sticks with you from it.
Well, I remember coaching like this at the CYC when I was at Carthage, and it's pretty ironic. He ended up, I thought I knew what the heck I was doing. I had this kid named Steve Durakovich at when I was an undergrad at Carthage. I think it was like a sophomore or a junior. And if for those that don't follow Division III basketball, but Steve is now the head coach at Carthage, and then went on to be, you know, his junior and senior year, he led Carthage to, you know, some of the best records in school history, and was actually the national player of the year, I believe, his senior year there. But it's, you know, it's like one of those things where you're volunteering, right? And you're just kind of working with some kids, and it was a great experience. It was like a really, it was a diverse population right in downtown, you know, in Kenosha. You were seeing a little bit in there, you know, kids coming over, and yeah, it was a lot of fun, you know, just this old sticky gym that you went up and try to act like you know what you were doing. And if you put an inbounds play in and you think you, and it works, you think you know what the heck is going on. But probably a little bit more is my first recruiting story. I remember getting hired out at Marymount University. And Marymount's a small little private Division III school in Arlington, Virginia. And I get out there. Scott McClary's the head coach, you know, pretty darn good. It's like the whole Joe Wooten, Morgan Wooten clan. And I go to the Laurel Boys and Girls Club. And I'm a fish out of water, right? I don't know what's going on. And I walk in there. I have no packet because we didn't want to afford a packet. Didn't want to pay for a packet then. And this is now, I don't know what this is, like 2006 or so, you know, so it's getting there. And I walk in and Coach McClary is like, if you like somebody, just call me, right? Just call me, tell me, text me, you know, who you like, or, you know, make some notes. And I'm going through it and I'm like, oh, I see this team called DC Assault. Some people in the basketball world might recognize DC Assault now because they're pretty good. And I'm watching DC Assault and I'm like, wow, this is really good. Some of these guys could really help us at Marymount University. And I call Coach McClary and I'm like, there's this one kid. He is really, really good. Well, what's the number? And I give him the number, number 3 on DC Assault. And he goes, yeah, that's Ty Lawson. I think Roy Williams probably beat us to the bunch, to the punch on that one. So I think anybody that gets into, you know, this game and recruit, you don't know what the hell you're doing. You know, I remember Chris Caputo saying that about me when I got the director of ops spot at George Mason. He's like, you're pretty good. You're ambitious, but you don't know what the hell you're doing. And you don't even know that you don't know what the hell you're doing. And it's just something that you got to learn on the fly, right?
Yeah, I had the same thing. First year coaching, went to Badger Advance Camp, and Coach Guard had me come over and stand by him because he knew it was my first year. And I was watching. I said, I really like that kid. Who's that kid? And mm-hmm. He goes, yeah, I like him too. Well, it ended up being DJ Carlton. They offered him the next day.
Yeah.
Same sort of thing. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So a little bit about your beginnings there. Can you walk us through your journey then from that point when you're in Virginia to where you are now?
Yeah, well, I ended up getting out to Virginia. I went to grad school at Ohio State and didn't really know what I was going to, you know, do with that. You know, I ended up fortunately got on with a graduate assistant position in the academic department there, and was not qualified for it. I didn't give them their value at all, but God bless them. They gave me a master's degree from there and working with student athletes, hockey, basketball, women's basketball, stuff like that on the academic side. And then I went home for Christmas actually, that year at Ohio State, and, you know, we're Catholic, and my mom's looking at in the paper, where should we go for church for Christmas? Because some time didn't work out. So we go over to Amherst, Wisconsin, and my mom must've got the time wrong or something like that. So we're in Amherst. The time at the Catholic church isn't right. And the Methodist is about ready to start. My dad's like, well, what's the matter? I mean, what's the difference? Let's just go to the Methodist church. So we go in there, and sitting in front of me is Eric Conkle, who now is the head coach at Tulsa, and, you know, just left Louisiana Tech and did a great job. And I didn't introduce myself there, but I went back to George Mason to Ohio State, and got me thinking, like, I'm going to reach out to Eric. And I reached out to him, and then he told me about working some of these camps out east, and got in touch with Morgan Wooten and ended up working those camps. And it was probably the best summer of my life, you know, Billy, where I lived out of my Jeep. I would spend the night in my car, you know, at like a, you know, Days Inn or Country Inn and Suites, you know, in the parking lot, wake up, say hello to the front desk, and, you know, use the shower, because there's always a shower next to the pool, get ready there, maybe grab a quick bite on the way out. And then I went to camp, and I did that basically the entire summer. So I worked Hoop Group and Five Star and Coach Wooten's camps. And then that just got me out on the East Coast, where I ended up catching somebody's eye, went to Marymount, then rented a dining room from Chris Caputo, who was the assistant coach at that time at George Mason. And then luckily got to George Mason and really enjoyed my time there. But I think, you know, like every coach, if you're out of your niche, like where you grew up, you eventually have to decide where you want to be and what level you want to be at. You know, like any coach that's asked me, what, you know, I want to get into coaching. Well, my question to them is always like, what level do you want to be at? Because if you want to be at Division I, then you have to be at Division I. If that means you're a volunteer or anything, you somehow have to get to Division I, because the chances of moving up in this business are so challenging. Like it's really, really, really hard, right? The chance favors if you're at that spot. If you want to be in high school, then be in high school. So, but it was like, where do you want to be? And I didn't want to be an East Coast guy. My connections, I wanted to get back to the Midwest. And so then went to Northern Illinois, was there. We got fired, got rehired back on. And then really, I wanted to get back to a place where basketball was important and in a league that was important. Then I went to Stevens Point for 6 years and was, you know, with, in my opinion, one of the best basketball coaches in the country, and Bob Semling. We won a national title with him, you know, onto lacrosse. So there's so much more there, but who nobody really cares about that.
Oh, they do. It is really important what you said there, is be at the level that you want to be at, because moving up is really hard. Whether, you know, D3 to D2, or D2 is like a needle in a haystack. And it's even smaller, D2 to D1. Yeah. And then to go from there to the pros is astronomically difficult, unless you're one of the elite coaches. So you had a long journey there. I'm curious about a theory or a basketball idea that you had early in your career that you've now changed because you're presented with new information.
I think, you know, when you start off, you always want to have an impact. I think young coaches want to have this huge impact during the game. And in my time with Coach Semling, really taught that, and Coach Larinaga, and I mean, and other people, but really with Coach Semling, because it was the first time I was really on the floor, right, to learn something and have an impact with your voice in a practice, was that coaches have an impact practice. You impact game through practice. Like, you know, there's some things you can change, you know, substitutions, right? Obviously substitutions, you know, during the game, matchups, who should be guarding who, you know, right? And then maybe, you know, occasionally drawing something up out of a timeout or whatever it is. But I think the impact that coaches have during games is not nearly as much as what coaches think they are. And I, so that's something where just the importance of practice. I mean, I remember, you know, one of my first couple of years at Stevens Point, and I'm screaming like hell on the sidelines, and I'm yelling like anybody can hear me, right? Like I'm really coaching it up. And I'll never forget, you know, Coach Semling saying at halftime or after the game, he's like, where is that during practice? That's when you need to have that voice, is during practice. That's your impact. Kids aren't recognizing that you're yelling at them while they're playing on the court, right? It's, you know, it's why some of the, you know, so many coaches are, have just as much success not being so animated on the sideline. And of course, some people's personalities to be that, you know, it's whatever we want to do, but that's why you can do it both different ways, that you can have an impact. And I believe the impact, you know, is in practice. And I think maybe in addition to that, taking it one step further is just my belief in motion offense and not having set plays. I don't remember set plays. I don't know set plays. We really rely on motion, and all that foundation really comes from Coach Sem and my time at Stevens Point.
Okay, I'm going to do one quick soapbox. Youth coaches, don't yell at players running up and down the court. Sub them out, talk to them on the bench, teach yeah. them, and go from there. All right, that's out of the way.
Yeah, that's so true. You have it. You nail it on the head, Billy. I think because you just want to, right? You want to have that voice. You feel like you need to have some control with it. But that's why basketball, in my opinion, is the best sport there is, because you really don't have control, right? You're just trying to herd cats, you know, out there. And if you're waiting till the game to do some of that stuff, well, probably ain't going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. So let's talk about motion offense. I was brought mm-hmm. up the complete opposite of motion yeah. offense: swing, flex, very regimented mm-hmm. movements. And first year at lacrosse, we tried to run motion with Ken Cable, mm-hmm. your predecessor there. Didn't go so well because nobody really knew how to play basketball. So we moved more towards, mm-hmm. A set offense. In my coaching time, I found it successful to teach motion concepts at the beginning and then move into more regimented things where I had more control, just because I didn't have as much time as you. So I'm really curious about this. End of the game situation, you call a timeout, down one. What is your offensive timeout like if you're not dictating what movements you want to have? What are some of the language and yeah. the discussion you're having with your players in that timeout?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and it's something that I battle with. You probably can say maybe on a daily or weekly basis. You know, early on when we came to lacrosse, we just wanted to establish ourselves with a defensive identity, and we really were that for like 3 years. That I refused to really draw anything up out of a timeout, and for certainly my first 2 years, and I noticed that bothered guys, right? That bothered guys. But I also know that we won our fair share of close games, and we're in close games and some games that I don't know maybe how consistently we could be in those games because we concentrate on the defensive end. And we, Coach Guard came up, and, you know, he does that. He does a phenomenal foundation, the Guarding Versus Cancer, right? So he came up and was at lacrosse a few years back. And I remember the comment that he made, and I don't have the term exactly right, but basically that the offense of a team goes to the level of talent. If you have really good offensive players, probably doesn't matter what system you're running. You're going to score right around this, you know, a certain range. If you don't, you're going to score right around here. That the water rises to the level of the offensive talent. And it hit me because that's probably what I agree with, you know, on the offensive side, you know, with motion, where and at the end of the game is like, you would like to have the ball in your best player's hands, right? Can you do that? Can you get them comfortable on a side of the floor with two guys with moving on the backside to get something done? But that takes a veteran group to do that. And you probably have to fail quite a bit more than you succeed early on, until you get it. But then if you get it right, it is unguardable. And again, I had the pleasure of witnessing this firsthand with Coach Semling, where we had a phenomenal offensive group in 2015. We had this Tyler Tillema from Randolph, Clayton Heyer, transfer from Green Bay, Trevor Hass, Joe Ritchie, Steven Pelkofer. I mean, then it doesn't even, you know, mention Austin Riff. I mean, it just went on Jordan Lewis, right? And it just goes on and on, like really good offensive players. And we could sort of the piss out of the basketball. And then the next year, and we ended up losing in the Sweet 16, got upset. It was a great team, though. It just happened. We got upset. Next year, graduated three All-Americans. And I think a lot of people thought that we wouldn't be very good. And we started 3-2, could have been 2-3 with a loss to Edgewood. And then all of a sudden we clicked and we get into the tournament and we're unguardable. I mean, it was man-to-man defense, motion offense, and it was the most beautiful thing like you could ever imagine. Like if you're like just somebody that enjoys that style of basketball. But the moment, and I did it this year, the moment I start drawing something out of a timeout, it takes away eventually. It eventually will chip away at your ability to be a true motion offense team. And it's that thin line of what your team needs. And are you willing to sacrifice this right now, knowing you'll never get it back later on? The moment you put something down that you're going to call Eagle 2 or bump or, you know, whatever the hell you want to call it, as soon as you do that, you're chipping away at being a motion offense team. And that it's still something that I battle with all the time. Because I think if teams watch us play, I think they think we're pretty good defensively. And probably for the most part, they think, that guy don't know what the hell he's doing on the offensive end. They just kind of pass it around, move a bunch, and then end up taking a shot. And it really is that's what it is.
Sideline Interactive delivers digital and LED scoring tables and video boards that generate excitement in your gym and the ultimate game day experience for your players and fans. We provide you the blueprint and the game plan to generate $10,000 or more in sponsorship revenue every year. 95% of our schools generate enough advertising dollars during the first school year to pay for their purchase. Any school or college can qualify for no fee, no interest financing over two school years. We're ready and able to deliver your order to you within 3 to 4 weeks. The tables and boards can be used for any indoor sport, as well as watching game film, school assemblies, signing days, or any other event that is held in your gym. Visit sidelineinteractive.com or call 832-786-0302 to schedule a 15 to 30 minute live web demo to see our tables and boards in action and what these fantastic products can do for you. Or email sales@sidelineinteractive.com. A link to sidelineinteractive.com is in the show notes for today's episode.
As many listeners know, I spent over 6 years as a general manager at Just the Game Fieldhouse in Wisconsin Dells. I was able to spend time talking hoops with coaches like Tom Izzo, along with high school and youth coaches, in addition to meeting some basketball legends, including my childhood favorite, Sam Elke, who is in the WBCA Hall of Fame and High School Basketball Museum, located at Just the Game Fieldhouse, which is a must-visit for any true hoop nerd. They also play host to the WBCA All-Star Games and Coaches Clinic every year. Just the Game hosts over 70 basketball and volleyball tournaments annually and is a great place to play for teams of all ages and ability levels. You can't beat all Wisconsin Dells has to offer in your free time. The Fieldhouse also has two sister companies in Just the Game Impressions and Just the Game Live. Just the Game Impressions specializes in customized screen printing and embroidery and promotional products. They serve businesses, schools, sports teams, and more. Just the Game Live takes pride in providing affordable and simple live streaming solutions for venues or programs of all kinds. Inquire today for more information. For more info on everything Just the Game has to offer, check them out at justthegamefieldhouse.com.
But you have actions, right? Whether it's a dribble out or a back cut or whatever. So you're maybe setting them up for success, knowing the opponent's weaknesses, that, hey, let's get one of these or two of these actions, right? You're not just throwing the balls out.
No. I mean, it's so important to have enough hoops. If you're going to be a motion offense team, you can't put more than two guys at a hoop because you have to work on those concepts every single day. Your shooting has to come out of those. You have to rep those things out. It has to be the game speed. You have to be the ability to move when you're tired. Right. Where you that 10 to 7 minute mark in the second half where you're not quite fresh, but you also don't have the burst of energy at the end of the game. Like, can you move with pace during that thing? And the only way to do that is you have to rep that out. And you have to get guys to feel tired. And can they move when they're tired? Are they committed to doing that when they're tired?
All right, so let's flip the script then. You're on defense playing against the motion team. you're up one, they have a timeout, and you know that they're not going to call a set play. So you can't say, hey, we know this is their bread and butter play, but you may know that there's an action or something. So what's the conversation like in that timeout when you're on the defensive side, up one?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of times we don't face teams like that. A lot of times we kind of know what.
Okay, so you're playing. You're playing Stevens Point. I'm just going to put it.
Yeah. When they're, it's really, really hard, right? I mean, hopefully, the benefit to in our style, I believe, is that our offense is going against the best defense every single day in practice, and I hope our defense is going against the best offense every single day in practice, so it prepares you for that moment, right? I mean, there's nothing outside of you. Hopefully your concepts are good enough on the defensive end and understanding, Billy, I think this is where coaches have an impact on the game. Who has scored? Who has scored in the last 10 minutes? Who has scored in the last 5 minutes? And understanding these two guys haven't taken a shot. They haven't scored this half. What the hell are you guarding them for? Why are you out there hugging when you should be in the gap? I think that's how you can have a huge impact, you know, on teams is understanding who the hell's scoring.
Situational awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Yes. Your vocabulary is so much better than mine. That's all good stuff.
I do this pretty regularly.
I'm going to write that one down.
Yeah, we all steal from each other. It's all good. Yeah. All right. Let's leave the X's and O's stuff aside. And what you do moving boys into men, you get them 18 years old, maybe their transfer is 19, 20 years old, whatever it is, and they leave young adults, right? What's the thing that you do that makes the biggest impact for them to make that jump from boys to men?
I think being really honest with them. You know, it starts in the recruiting process where we tell them flat out, like, you are going to fail. You're going to go from the reason why your team won big games in high school, like won a state title. We just got done recruiting, and he put his deposit in, so I can say it. JJ from NIDA, right? That he's a pretty good player, and just won a state title. And we had this conversation 2 weeks ago, and when we're talking, like, you're going to go from the reason why your team won big games to maybe the reason why your team loses drills in practice, and that's really, really humbling. And you need to know this is why you're failing right now. This is why you're not. And failing's a really like an intense word, right? But I've kind of found, and again, this is from Coach Sam, right? The man's amazing, right? Is that the more challenging you are with guys, if you're recruiting the right guys, they want that. They really do want that. They have had that so few times in their life that they actually like relish it. I mean, we just got done graduating Sean Sukumel, right? I mean, you know all about Sean, and at Sun Prairie and Madison, you talk about a stubborn SOB. And I loved coaching Sean. I loved coaching him because he wanted to be coached hard. He wanted to be coached hard, and we could have passionate conversations with each other at the right moment. And I could tell him the honest truth of what it was, why we were succeeding, why he was succeeding, why I'm failing, and it went somewhere rather than beating around the bush, because kids can see through that stuff right away. And, you know, I'll put a plug in for our program. It's why in my 5 years here, we've never had a kid we've recruited transfer to another school. I mean, there's 1,500 kids in the portal every single year or now or whatever it is. And guys, because if you're honest with them, it really does go a long way in being honest with them. But you know what I mean? Like, I think that's one thing that I was not comfortable with early on. And now it's something that I almost wear with a badge of honor of how truthful we are to those kids and their parents.
Yeah. And we have like trepidation about having those difficult conversations with people, but the reality is the reward on the back end of those outweighs the nerves on the front end so much, as long as we are able with experience now to see that and get through it. I think that's so important. And yeah, I'll throw another Sean Sukumel plug out there too, because him and I had some ram headbutting issues when he played for me, but he's another coach on the court. I loved him. And I was really happy that he finished his career with you.
Yeah. Well, you know, you think about his 3 year career, first year in school record 21 wins, next year, COVID, you know, hosting the WIAC championship game for the first time, leading the league in assists, 2-1 assist to turnover over his career. And then last year, you know, another school record, 21 wins in our first ever NCAA tournament victory. And that kid had a hard time scoring outside of 3 feet. But I think if you would ask Sean, because of motion offense, and I know he would, because we just got done with our senior speeches, he knew I believed in him 100%, because you can do other things within motion to make your team successful where you don't have to be drawing up a set every single time with it, that you can put the ball in your players' hands and empower them to make a play. And I think that's something that maybe Sean enjoyed the most about this program, is that he got to feel that.
Well, one thing you mentioned with JJ was, you know, coming in and them being the reason they lose drills and them wanting like that competitiveness and that responsibility each day. Well, Sean and others that are in your program are just winners. They're going to win at everything they do, whether it's tiddlywinks or horse or whatever they're going to do. But, you know, someone like a recruit coming in, they crave the competition, and you revolve your program around that, because they're not going to last long if they don't have that element of wanting to compete at everything that they do, whether it's getting a 4.0, whether it's being the first one to somewhere, whatever it is. Like that's an ability, a feature of successful individuals.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And I think by telling them that early on, if that's going to be what I would like to think what our standard is, and believe me, we are so far away from being a program that's like what you want it to be, right? I think we're just in the beginning of stages of that. We're working towards that every day. But in what I would like to think we're working for, and what we touch every so often, is this program that wants to be held to a really high standard. And you can't hold guys to a high standard if you didn't recruit the right guys. And you can't recruit the right guys if you didn't have really blunt conversations early on in the process with them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's finish up on a non-basketball related question here. Make you think a little bit. I'm going to go a little bit off the cuff from what I normally do. So imagine you're standing in front of a refrigerator and you open that door and you look inside that refrigerator. What one item in that refrigerator best identifies with who you are as a person and why?
Oh, God. That's just really intense stuff. You know, I'd say maybe what do we got? Let's just fire it off here. I'll try to see if this plays along, as I'll just say something and then I'll just see if I can BS my way through it.
Sure.
So, yeah. So how about an avocado? You know, you look at an avocado and it's not really, really all that. It doesn't have a great presence about it, right? You look at an avocado, it doesn't have a great presence about it. And then you open it up. And there's something there, and then all of a sudden you work it a little bit, right? You work it a little bit, and not only does it taste pretty darn good, it's actually healthy for you. Yeah, how's that?
That's pretty good. It's the first time I've had avocado.
There's not a room I'll walk into, Coach Kegler, where people are like, "Oh, that guy's somebody. That guy was a player. That guy is a coach." I'll never have that in my entire life, right? All 5'9" of me is gonna be walking in somewhere, and more often than not, Mike Moshek, who knows more about basketball, who's forgotten more than I know, like he's like, "Hey, coach," you know, people just address him, right? It's great. The NCAA tournament, the photographer is taking photos. I took a look at him like a week later, and they're all Mike Moshek. Right? he's the guy, you know. But that's all right. And I, you know, with our guys, they just kind of make fun of, I know who I am. I was a really bad player. I waved the hell of a towel like for Bosco Derivakovic at Carthage. But, you know, as long as you know you got some substance to you, and hopefully I got some substance to me.
I love it. Thanks for wrapping that up. And thanks for joining us on the Hoop Nerds.
Yeah, I appreciate you, Coach Kegler.